The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
We got top-ranked boxing Saturday night, highlighted by former unified lightweight champion Teofimo Lopez taking on Pedro Campa in the junior lightweight main event. Coverage begins at 10 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Deportes, with ESPN Plus coverage of the prelims beginning at 6:30 Eastern. Welcome back to Get Up. We are coming to you live from above the Heineken River Deck at Pier 17. I got Fowler, I got Tannenbaum, I got Hasselbeck, I got Canty. We're talking football on a Friday because there was football on television last night. We had Giants and Patriots in preseason action. No Mac Jones for New England in this one, but Daniel Jones did get the start for the Giants. First Giants possession, they're at the Patriots' 41-yard line. Jones going to complete this to Colin Johnson for the first down, 17 yards there. Later in the drive, it's third and five. The Giants are at the Patriots' 19-yard line. Jones going to find Saquon Barkley on the right side for another first down. Check it out again. Great pitch and catch. Daniel Jones to Saquon Barkley. Maybe this is the year that it works. Later in the drive, third and five again. Giants at the Patriots' 7-yard line. Jones to Kenny Golladay, but Golladay drops the ball. Jones took a shot on the play. Giants settled for a field goal, up 3-0. Next drive, Jones fakes the handoff. Josh Uche, not fooled. One of a few hits Daniel Jones was taking in this game. He finished 6-for-10 for 69 yards, no picks, no touchdowns, and the Giants won the game 23-21. Not that that is relevant in any way. Chris Canty, you were more concerned about the hits that Daniel Jones was taking from the Patriots defense. Am I right?
No doubt about it. I mean, you're talking about an organization that has invested two top 10 picks in their offensive line over the last three drafts, and they're not getting the return on investment. You saw some big shots taken by the Patriots defense on Daniel Jones, the Josh Uche sack with the Jennings hit, the Mac Wilson hit. Those things can't happen. The Giants have to clean that up if they're going to get the best out of Daniel Jones and get him to cut down on the turnovers.
I think it's a great point by Chris. You look at this full screen here in terms of, you know, we know how Lamar Jackson plays. We know how much, Buffalo runs Josh Allen. And so I think the fact that Daniel Jones is even in that category is something that needs to be fixed. I mean, it can't be the case. And when you look at some of the hits last night, you know, they weren't all created equal. The Jennings hit is actually an unblocked defender because it's a protection issue. Golladay actually should catch the ball, and they either have a first down or close to scoring. And so, that's not the one that concerns me. The one that concerns me is coming off of play action when, you know, when guys are accounted for, they need to be blocked, you know, because the quarterback can't do it all. And so I think ultimately it's going to be hard to evaluate Daniel Jones if he once again is getting hit as much as any quarterback in the National Football League.
Mike T, what'd you see from the Giants?
I was encouraged by Saquon Barkley, not just running the ball, because I thought there was some real explosive to his game, but what he did out of the backfield. And he's dynamic with the ball in his hands in space. You can see here he still has a burst. And when you look at Brian Daboll's track record, he gets the running backs involved. Here he is converting for a first down. So to me, if I'm the Giants, and I understand Tim's concerns about the quarterback getting hit, the best way to protect the quarterback, get out of his hands. Run the ball, long handoff, Saquon Barkley in space in the passing game.
Yeah, year five now for Saquon, Jeremy. Yeah. I think people have almost forgotten about how great this guy was supposed to be. What are you hearing?
Yeah, people around the league are watching Saquon Barkley's situation closely. You know, I've talked to a few different executives who say this is supposed to be the next great running back in this league, the top guy. And not only has he been injured a bunch, but when he's been in there, he hasn't run with conviction, kind of tries to bounce it outside instead of hitting a hole. So last night, he showed a glimpse a little bit, not huge yardage, of what he can do in this new offense of Brian Daboll could re-inspire him a little bit.
Yeah, they were talking on the broadcast about how he had like a 2-yard pickup, and those are the kind of dirty yards Daboll wants him to get. So that better than obviously the negative run. On the other side of the field, Matt Patricia and Joe Judge split the offensive play calling duties for New England. This, of course, adds a new wrinkle to what has been a hot button topic surrounding the Patriots all offseason. Who's going to call the plays? Who's going to run the offense? After the game, Bill Belichick was asked about the benefit of using multiple play callers, and as you might expect, he didn't have much to say.
I thought it would be a good opportunity for us to do that.
Do you know if one will call plays when the regular season arrives?
Yeah, well, don't worry about that. We'll work it out.
So have you decided?
We're going through a process, just like everything else on this team.
So that clears it up, huh, Tim?
I love it. I mean, I know Mike was talking earlier about the great opportunities Bill gives guys. It's cute that there's a fairness fairy in New England now that's giving everyone a chance to call plays and be an offensive coordinator. Look, the reality is I think it's important for, a quarterback to understand what a play caller is trying to do when a play comes in. Like, there's a reason. Like, just because a coach calls a shot play down the field doesn't mean he wants you to take the shot. Like, there might be another reason why he's calling that play. And so I think ultimately when there's a great relationship between play caller and quarterback, offenses operate better because, you know, we say, hey, the quarterback's an extension of the coaching staff out on the field. Well, it's because he's seeing the game the same way that the play caller is. And I just think that it's a challenge. I'm not saying it can't work. I think we're giving New England the benefit of the doubt because of Bill Belichick's track record of success. But I think ultimately it's hard when you're not seeing the game the same exact way as the play caller.
You know, guys, in my next lifetime, I want to come back as an athletically deficient backup quarterback that complain about pass protection, not having the same guy in my ear. I mean, things just have to go. You got to go through life. Things have to be perfect. How about developing your coaching staff? And this is the time to do it. We have a month to get ready, and Bill Belichick will get this all ironed out, Tim. As Aaron Rodgers once said, just relax. And in all seriousness, like, how else are you supposed to get guys reps? Maybe it's Matt Patricia. Maybe it's Joe Judge. This is the time and the place to do it. And I do trust Bill Belichick. He has developed coaches for the better part of 25 years and done it at a really high level.
And you were saying, look, I mean, it's not – when the season starts, it's not going to be alternating play callers, right? It has to be just one.
That's exactly right. But it is a collaborative effort, as we all know, in terms of putting the game plan together. Obviously, Matt Patricia is going to handle the run game and the protections, and Joe Judge is going to handle the passing concepts. So that's pretty normal. And there will be one voice in Mac Jones's ear, and they have 30 days to figure that out.
Yeah, hey, listen, Mike, you don't have to worry about coming back unathletic. You already are.
No,
like that, you got that under control, Mike. Like, you have unathletic on lockdown, Tana Bob. Like, you don't have to ask for that. Like, are you kidding me? Like,
I would like to get this conversation back on track. You can keep running this, but I want to hear what Chris Canty has to say while we keep watching that. Chris, what do you think about what's going on in New England?
No, I think Mike and Tim are making some great points, and both things can be true. When you start to look at play calling, it's more art than science, and a part of the learning curve that Matt Patricia is going through is figuring out exactly what Matt Jones does well and what he's comfortable with. So when it comes to the sequencing of plays, that's the part where we want to see Matt Patricia evolve as far as a play caller and make sure that he can be sharpened up and ready to go for the regular season, because I do agree with Mike Tannenbaum. Just like you develop your players, you can develop your coaches as well, and that's what Bill Belichick has become known for in his 20 years tenure as the New England Patriots head coach. So I think this will all get worked out. I'm not as concerned as Tim Hasselbeck seems to be. I think Bill Belichick has earned that benefit of the doubt.
Jeremy, what are you hearing?
I don't know how I'm going to follow this, but basically
fire off insults.
Right. I talked to somebody in the know. They said that short term there are going to be some growing pains here because they're transitioning from Josh McDaniel's system that had a lot of Tom Brady friendly language in it all those years. They're trying to streamline things. So long term, over the course of the season, they believe the offense will be easier to handle. Right now, a little bit of transition. You're seeing that in training camp with, you know, some issues with the offensive line. They're hoping over time that this gets sorted out.
Yeah, and it's also worth noting, these guys aren't all new to each other. Judge and Patricia are pretty close friends who've worked together on Belichick's staff in the past. So it's probably going smoother than we think. Hopefully for the Patriots' sake, it's going smoother than we think. There was another preseason game last night. It was Titans-Ravens, and you know the Ravens were taking it seriously. We'll tell you why. Even though Lamar Jackson was not playing for Baltimore, Malik Willis, rookie Malik Willis, was playing for Tennessee. Tim Hasselbeck, what did you see from Malik Willis?
Saw elite running, like here. I mean, it's a rollout. It's a pass designed to the right. He just kind of decides to take it on his own. He's an elite runner in college. You can kind of anticipate that showing up in the preseason.
How about this throw? With the tie game, Titans on the 23-yard line, 48-yard completion to Racy McMath. That's a first down for the Titans. Couple plays later, Willis feeling the pressure. Look at that one, Tim. What'd you think?
Well, I like the big throw down the field. I also like the athleticism. You know, reminded me of a young Mike Tannenbaum running around the streets of Needham. Does an excellent job of getting hips around and finding his tight end.
Later in the half, Ravens down 10-7. They have a first and 10 on the Titans 14. This is Tyler Huntley to Shamar Bridges. Nice leaping catch for the touchdown. Ravens won 23-10, which is noteworthy because it is the 21st straight preseason game that Baltimore has won. They haven't lost a preseason game since 2015. It is the longest streak in NFL history of consecutive preseason wins. It is one of the weirdest stats that we bring up every year this time. They're going to try and keep it going, though, next week when they play the Cardinals in Arizona. Now to a developing story in the NFL. Deshaun Watson is set to start at quarterback for the Browns in their preseason game tonight in Jacksonville. Watson has not played an NFL game in 586 days, and he's currently awaiting the results of the NFL's appeal of his six-game suspension for violating the personal conduct policy. For more on this, we're joined by NFL Nation Browns reporter Jake Trotter, who gets up with us from Jacksonville ahead of the Browns-Jaguars game tonight. Jake, what is the Browns' plan with Watson tonight?
Well, Dan, as you mentioned, Deshaun Watson is going to start tonight. He's going to play a decent amount, depending on how the game goes, and a lot of the other offensive starters are going to be playing with him as well. Remember, Watson didn't play, Dan, in 2021, so the Browns have been trying to reacclimate him to the field throughout the offseason and really especially during training camp. And keep in mind, the Browns don't know how long they're going to have Watson with them. If Peter Hardy, who's overseeing this NFL appeal, if he decides that Watson is suspended for the entire season or indefinitely, Watson is gone from the team immediately. So the Browns are trying to get him as much work as possible while they still have him.
So listen, the best case scenario for Watson and the Browns is this current six-game suspension. If so far they haven't made any moves, they have Jacoby Brissett as the backup, and their plan, right, is for him to play. But if the suspension is extended, do you think they would pursue other options?
Yeah, so I can tell you, Dan, that when Sue Robinson, the disciplinary officer, her initial decision came down, and it was six games last week. You know, people I talked to in the organization, they said, listen, we can go 4-2 with Jacoby Brissett. The first month of the schedule is not particularly difficult. We get Deshaun Watson back week 7. We're 4-2, and we are right in the middle of things in the AFC. But I can also tell you that had that initial decision been longer than six games, there would have been some serious discussions about a Jimmy Garoppolo trade. So now with the NFL seemingly poised to drop the hammer on Deshaun Watson, I think you're going to see a lot of people within the organization pushing for the team to discuss the viability of a Jimmy Garoppolo trade in the event that Watson is out for a long time.
All right, great stuff from Jake. Thanks. You're all over the story for us. We'll be checking back in with you, obviously, as this continues. But that's an interesting idea on Garoppolo, right? I mean, he is sitting there in San Francisco, throwing but not practicing, right? They want to trade him. They've made it extremely clear. Yeah. Mike, you think that'd be a good move?
Yeah, I've been talking about that now for weeks because it's a win-win. If you're San Francisco, worst case scenario is you cut Jimmy G and he goes to the Rams with Matt Stafford's elbow. He goes to Seattle. You want to get some draft choice compensation. And again, I like Jacoby Brissett, but if you're the Browns and you can get somebody like Jimmy Garoppolo to solidify that position with Jacoby Brissett for the season, that gives you a much better chance to win in a very competitive AFC North. Again, it bears repeating, they are one hit away from Josh Dobbs or Josh Rosen playing for a very good football team.
Yeah, something has changed with the Browns, the tenor of that situation, because when I was checking on Jimmy Garoppolo possibilities for weeks, I was told, no, not really, you know, we're not really in that mix. For yesterday, it was more like, you know, there could be some interest. We'd at least entertain it. So they know that something's going down, perhaps today, with a suspension appeal that could be dropping the hammer. And really, Deshaun Watson, I'm told, his sole goal is to get on the field somehow in 2022, whether he has to incur a fine to maybe offset the number of games. But his goal is to get that out there as soon as possible. We're talking almost 600 days since he's seen an actual NFL game.
And, Dan, if we put our Jimmy G hat on for a second, We want to invest this year into paying off in March of 2023. So how do we do that? Go to Cleveland. That gives me my best chance to play the best football possible. So the next four months is an investment in my future. And clearly, in my opinion, when you look at their offensive line, their skill players, it's the best situation for him in mid-August.
Obviously, we'll keep an eye on this. Jeremy mentioned that a decision could come down at any time. If it does, we will definitely keep you posted. Coming up, more quarterback talk. Are Russell Wilson's best days ahead of him or behind him? Will Russ lead the Broncos back to the playoffs? We'll discuss that. Plus, it's trade day for the 49ers as their new starting quarterback takes the field tonight. Are the 49ers better off with Lance this season than they would be with Jimmy G? We'll discuss when we come back.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use the code 5HETRAVEL at 5HOURENERGY.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only, not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HOURENERGY.com and use the code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
NBA fans, listen up. You've got to try Pick 6, the newest fantasy app from DraftKings, an official partner of the NBA. Getting started is simple. Select if a player will have more or less of a stat. For example, will a player have more than one rebound, or will a player have less than 3.5 assists? Pick your favorite players and compete for huge cash prizes. Download the new DraftKings Pick 6 app now using code Parlay and take on the competition with your best NBA player picks. Only on DraftKings Pick 6 with code Parlay. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 18 plus in most eligible states. Age varies by jurisdiction. Eligibility restrictions apply. Pick 6 not available in all states, including but not limited to Connecticut and New York. For up-to-date lists of states, visit dkng.co/pick6states. Void where prohibited. See terms at pick6.draftkings.com/promos.
That's awful cute. Hey, we're back on Get Up. Let's run through some QB quick reads with what you need to see in the preseason. Tim Hasselbeck, start with Jalen Hurts. What are you looking for out of him?
Well, there's been a lot of talk about the pressure on Jalen Hurts because of the supporting cast they've assembled in Philadelphia. What I want to see from him in the preseason is just more consistency in the passing game. We know the talent is there around him. We know that he's a good football player. But is he a really good quarterback? That's the question. If I were Philadelphia, I would not use any quarterback run game stuff in the preseason game. It would be all about, what Justin Fields is able to do in the passing game. When I look at Justin Fields in Chicago, I think there's a lot to kind of be curious about with Fields. You know, last year there were times that we saw his athleticism just shine through. I mean, I think that he can be a Cam Newton type of player. I think he's that talented. But I want to see better command at the line of scrimmage. I want to see more understanding of what they're doing with their protections so he can adjust them. The offense is not that much different than what he was doing a year ago, but I think command of that offense will be key. And then as we go to San Francisco and look at Trey Lance, to me, this is about just playing, getting the reps. I feel like we're going to see a player that makes mistakes, and I think that's okay. Essentially, we're looking at a guy that's played roughly 4 games and nearly 1,000 days when you get to the regular season. So I think preseason reps are important for Trey Lance. I think there'll be mistakes. I'm anticipating that there are growing pains, but he needs to make them and learn from them. I think that's the biggest deal for Trey Lance.
Yeah, to me, this is honestly one of the most fascinating stories to follow as we get closer to the NFL season. How does a very good 49ers team that was in the NFC Championship game last year make the transition to this inexperienced quarterback? What are you hearing?
Well, I'm hearing he's had a really good week of practice, that he's coming along and progressing like the 49ers would like. Started a little slow in training camp, but he didn't have Debo Samuel. He's going against a really good first-team 49ers defense, so it's been a transition. But they like what he's doing, especially with the run and pass stuff. He's a true dual-threat quarterback, so they plan to utilize that in a big way. And I talked to his quarterback coach, his private coach, Adam Dedeaux, out in L.A. He said that the last couple weeks, the way he was training leading up to 49ers camp, was really impressive, that this guy is ready for that jump.
Interesting. Canty, what are you watching on this situation?
I'm excited to see Kyle Shanahan's play design and his evolution as a play caller with a guy like Trey Lance because of the movement skills. Trey Lance can be a focal point in the running game, and if you look back to the Shanahan offenses, even going back to Mike Shanahan in Denver, when he had John Elway, when he had Jake Plummer, when he had Jay Cutler, and then most recently when Kyle and Mike were in Washington with RG3, all of those were top five offenses. And so when you look at what the 49ers are bringing to the party with their offensive line and their skill positions, and then parachuting Trey Lance in the middle of it, this is going to be an absolutely potent offense, and it's going to be something that the rest of the NFL is going to have to contend with. I'm excited to see it.
Yeah, Tim, that's kind of how I feel. Like, this is Kyle Shanahan sort of betting on himself and his ability to coach something great out of this young man, especially with the roster he's built around him. Am I on the right track?
I think you're exactly right that that's what Kyle Shanahan is doing. And in fairness to Kyle Shanahan, he has probably been better than any play caller in the National Football League at scripting completions. You know, he's had to play a number of different quarterbacks in his time in San Francisco, and he's done an excellent job with that. Look, I don't think that anybody would dispute the ability that Trey Lance has. I mean, it just, in terms of physical talent, like if you're going to go put a QB competition on, you know, a QB challenge on, like he would thrive in that environment. The thing about it is this, though, that I think everyone just has to be realistic about. And I think if we don't see growing pains, then Kyle Shanahan's brilliant. We're talking about a player that has started 1 year of college football, one full season. Then he played one game the next season. Then he played three games as a pro last year. He has played very little football at the quarterback position since leaving high school. And the football that he did play was at a lower level of competition. And so I think if we think he's going to roll right in and play at the highest level, at a high level, I think those expectations are too high for a young player with very little experience.
What do you got your eye on, Niners-Packers tonight?
Yeah, I'm going to go to the other side of the ball. This has been one of the great rivalries in football, 49ers and Packers. Mm-hmm. And Jordan Love has a great opportunity, and this all started a couple years ago. The Packers traded up for Jordan Love to replace Aaron Rodgers. We all know what happened there, but at some point, Aaron Rodgers is going to retire, and can Jordan Love be the guy? And look, the quarterback is a developmental position. Sometimes it works out. Certainly, we can have Tim talk about that, but sometimes it does work out.
Wow.
And after a couple of years, Jordan Love maybe take the next step, and we certainly hope from a Packer perspective he does. So I think as much as we're intrigued by Trey Lance, I'm just as intrigued by Jordan Love's development.
All right. Well, we're not going to give Tim time to respond because we have to get to break. But I imagine he'll have a chance later in the show because we're not quite done yet here on Get Up. We come back. We're going to talk about Tampa Tom's time off and how it will impact the Buccaneers' offense. And we'll show you why it could be a long September for the Bucs. And he didn't work out in Chicago, but could Mitch Trubisky turn his career around in Pittsburgh? Or will the Steelers want to ditch Mitch soon? We'll talk about it next.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. Delicious, meat nutritious, and the snack that packs a real protein punch. Wonderful pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Wonderful pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you're on the go a lot. taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries. Well, the good news is, not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein, providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snacking game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
We're back on Get Up. We're going to Tampa now, where Tom Brady will be away from the Bucs for a period of time to, quote, deal with some personal things. Todd Bowles, the head coach, said Brady will return after next week's preseason game against the Tennessee Titans. That game's on August 20th. Here is more of Bowles from yesterday.
And it's something he needs to handle. We trust him. We talked about it. It was scheduled way before training camp, and he will not be here until after Tennessee. He didn't have the years and the experience that the guy has and comes in and works diligently. I would definitely be concerned. It's a personal issue, and that's all I can tell you.
Jeremy, is he telling us the truth?
Yes. People I talked to are not overly concerned over there right now. They believe, and it was pointed out to me, that if there's a starting guard or starting cornerback that did this, it wouldn't be a big deal, and it does happen on occasion, but since it's Tom Brady, it gets magnified. The only mild concern is him getting on the same page with a lot of new moving parts on that offense. New center, because Ryan Jensen got hurt, Julio Jones, Kyle Rudolph, but so far that process has been really good, so they feel like they can pick up right where they left off.
Tim, are you worried about this affecting the Buccaneers early in the season?
Look, I think any time that a player of his caliber is not around the team, it can have an impact, just because he can have such a positive impact on the people that he's around. So, you know, in terms of Brady being ready for the beginning part of the season, no, I'm not concerned about that. But in terms of, you know, maybe the guys around him, you know, and the expectation that he has for them, can it show its head early in the season? It absolutely can.
Chris Canty, what do you think? Are you concerned at all about? I mean, look at this. This first four games is kind of rough. The Bucs have to be hitting the ground running here to start the season.
Yeah, the Bucs can't afford to start slow. And with all of the new moving pieces on the offensive side of the ball, you get concerned about that. But, guys, even with the 10-day absence, Tom Brady's still going to have 3 weeks before they kick off the regular season down in Dallas. That's plenty of runway for him to be able to figure it out with all of his new guys. But the thing that I'm most concerned with is who's going to set the agenda for the team in Tom's absence. We know that that's one of the great intangibles that Brady has, his leadership traits. Now it's going to be on Todd Bowles to be able to fill in the gap, and that remains to be seen on whether or not he can do that while wearing the hat of being the de facto defensive coordinator. It didn't go so well with Todd Bowles first time around as a head coach with the New York Jets, so we got to see whether or not he can improve in that regard with Tom Brady being out for the next 10 days.
You see, Chris, I actually see that as a positive. I think that's an opportunity for someone organically to step up to become a leader. And by the way, they also have to evaluate Kyle Trask, who may or may not be the future. So this is actually a little bit of an opportunity with Tom Brady stepping aside, which is obviously not ideal, but I'm sure he's already looking at Dallas tape, getting ready for opening day. And with Zoom now, you can actually participate in meetings virtually. So I don't think it's the end of the world. Veterans leave camp, obviously not this long typically, but it actually presents an opportunity for some of their young players.
But, I mean, like, there's a lot of new stuff going on in Tampa, right? I mean, like, the guys talked about it, right? The new center, the changes on the offensive line, yeah, the receiver situation with Chris Godwin coming back from injury. I mean, I don't know. I mean, is there – yeah. I mean, there's no – you're the GM of a team. The quarterback vanishes for 2 weeks in the middle of training camp. I mean, that's not nothing, right?
Well, again, it's Tom Brady. So yeah, he wasn't going to play games anyway, so they are going to miss some practices. But, look, Julio Jones has played a lot of football. Ideally, he would get more reps with Russell Gage. But who knows? Maybe he's going to come back with Gronk. You know, we'll see how it plays out.
He's recruiting Gronk right now.
I guess that's possible. Canty, you look like you had a thought on this.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of new. I think we can't overstate that. You're talking about 3 new starters on the interior of that offensive line from the group from a year ago. You're talking about new receivers in Russell Gage, Julio Jones, and Kyle Rudolph. There's a lot of moving parts, a lot of adjustment that has to be made, a learning curve, so to speak, with getting to know those guys. And so that absence will have some potential impact, but we're all betting on Tom Brady to mitigate that impact, especially early on in the regular season.
You're right. Whatever we say about this, it all comes back to, but it's Tom Brady, right, Tim?
I mean, Ultimately, yes. That like that is. And I think Chris makes a good point about the runway leading up to the first game of the season. Really thinking about this, when you talk about, after the Titans game. So we're talking about Brady returning on the 21st. So just count how many practices you actually have. How many of those practices are walkthroughs before a game? Things of that nature. And so, look, I think in terms of how much he's missing, it's probably not that significant. But look, at the same time, as you look at a guy like, we're just looking at Julio Jones, who still looks like he's like 23 years old. Like, the fact that, he could be getting reps with Brady. Yeah, look, that would be helpful.
Yeah, look, I mean, the Brady is Brady, and I'm sure he's got a handle on this. And as we said earlier, I don't want to make light of the situation. Hopefully everything is okay and he's not dealing with anything terribly serious. Yeah. Obviously, that would be more important than whatever, getting ready for a football season. At the end of the day, the Bucs know who their quarterback is going to be, but there are some teams that do not. So, Jeremy Fowler, get us up to speed on some of the quarterback competitions going on, starting in Carolina.
Yeah, let's do it. Baker Mayfield and Sam Darnold going at it. I'm told Darnold very much is still in this mix, has a chance to earn the job. But the thing with Mayfield, as was told to me, his football smarts have really impressed Carolina, maybe even more so than they thought. They knew he was a sharp quarterback mind coming out of Oklahoma and coming out of Cleveland the last few years, but he has grasped the new offense relatively quickly, and it's showing on the practice field. So he could have the inside track here on that job in the next week or two. They're going to let it play out in the preseason action. Now with the Seahawks, Geno Smith, the veteran, has the edge right now, but I'm told that Drew Lock has slightly closed the gap. He's had a couple good days recently, and I'm told that his, funky arm talent, he can do a lot of those Patrick Mahomes-type throws, has stood out. He shows up. So Pete Carroll has to decide, do you go with the trusted veteran or do you go with the guy with the higher ceiling in Drew Lock? So right now, Smith at the slight edge. And then Mitchell Trubisky, you see him there. He is getting command of the Steelers offense, having a clear lead on the quarterback job right now from everything that I've heard. Although I've also been told Mason Rudolph, fifth-year guy, has had the best camp that he's had in Pittsburgh since he's been there drafted in the third round. And so he's making it at least interesting. But Najee Harris, the running back, told me that Trubisky's underrated league-wide. This is a guy who can really produce because he can run and he can throw.
Funky arm talent, I think it might be a good band name. I'm going to write that one down and save that. Anyway, we're talking about Trubisky. He spoke yesterday at Steelers camp. He's getting ready to start their first preseason game. Here's what he had to say about the whole situation.
We're not trying to show everything, especially in the first preseason game, which is why you want to go out there, and it's all about execution. It can be a basic play, but it can work really good if all 11 guys are on the same play. So we're obviously not going to show everything. It might be a little more basic.
Yeah, Jeremy, you think it's like basically his job to lose?
Yeah, I think you would have to have a really rough couple weeks, especially in the preseason games, to lose the job. But they gave him some real money this offseason. They liked his pedigree. Won more games than he lost in Chicago. Learned a lot behind Josh Allen and Buffalo. So all things are leading to Trubisky taking this job. And really, what happens after that is more interesting because Mason Rudolph is a guy who could be a steady backup. Mm-hmm. They really don't want to trade him. But then you got three quarterbacks with Kenny Pickett. You want to have him active on game day, too, for a learning experience standpoint. So they have some decisions to make there.
What do you think, Tim, about if Trubisky's the starter, this whole situation, and how the Steelers will do this year with all this going on?
I think that Mitchell Trubisky is a better player than the general perception of him because I think that the situation in Chicago wasn't great. He didn't have a ton of starts in college. And so I think he's a much better player probably today than he was while he was in Chicago. So I think he can have some success. I think it's kind of a muddy situation. I didn't love the Pickett draft selection. I do think Mason Rudolph is a guy that could have a very long career in the National Football League. And so I think the challenge is the future is clearly Kenny Pickett. And so at some point, you either have to deal Mason Rudolph, you have to give Kenny Pickett the opportunity to play. And so I think ultimately I don't see them as a playoff team in that division. And I think we're going to see Kenny Pickett before too long.
Canty, how do you see this playing out?
I see it the same way Tim Hasselbeck does. Mitch Trubisky may be the starter early on, but let's be clear. He's just the pace car until Kenny Pickett gets up to speed, because when you look at the investment that the organization made in Trubisky, you're talking about $24 million over 2 years. That's not starting quarterback money. That's not franchise quarterback money. But when you look at the Pittsburgh Steelers taking a quarterback in the first round, their belief is that's going to be their guy for the next decade plus. And so I think this is all all about a starter being able to show Kenny Pickett how to prepare, how to go about his business as a pro, and then when he's ready, at some point during this season, Mitch Trubisky will give way to Kenny Pickett being the starting quarterback in Pittsburgh.
Yeah, actually, if Kenny Pickett doesn't play at all this year, it could still turn out to be a really good draft choice. The whole axiom of win for today and develop for tomorrow applies here. You have a really good defense. You have a head coach who's never had a losing record. I agree with what Tim said, which is Mitch Trubisky, I think, is a little bit of an underrated player. Really good athlete, has a much better surrounding cast here in Pittsburgh. And Kenny Pickett, if he sits for a year and plays next year, there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah, so we'll keep an eye, obviously, on the Steelers quarterback situation. Sounds like it could change, not just before the season starts, but maybe at some point during the season. We'll go to baseball now. They played a Major League Baseball game last night in an Iowa cornfield. This is the second MLB Field of Dreams game from Dyersville, Iowa. This year's version featured the Cubs against the Reds, and the pregame featured Ken Griffey Jr. and Ken Griffey Sr. walking out of the corn and playing catch in the outfield. Then the players come through the corn and onto the field. This is quite a visual Major League Baseball has established for itself. Then it played a game. Top of the first, Cubs up 2-0. Ian Happ at the plate with a runner on second. Happ rips one into the gap in left center. Nico Horner scores. Happ is on second with an RBI double. The Cubs have a 3-0 lead. Bottom of the seventh, the Reds now trailing 4-2. Here's Joey Votto at the plate with a runner on second looking to close the gap. He does not. Brandon Hughes strikes him out, ends the threat. Cubs hold on and win the game 4-2 over the Reds. And there are the fireworks. Fun night in baseball. We come back, more football. Are Russell Wilson's best days ahead of him, or are they behind him? Will he lead the Broncos back to the playoffs? We'll talk about it next.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPNpods. That's amazon.com/ESPNpods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
The eye candy time. The Cowboys and Broncos are having joint practices in Denver the last couple days. Continues today. Let's look at some eye candy from yesterday's practice. Canty, what do you make of Zeke Elliott taking this big hit from Bradley Chubb?
Oh, yeah. The Denver Broncos defense is live on number 21. I know this is supposed to be third, but the juices get going in them joint practices. And sometimes you might want to take a guy to the ground. But I love this right here. Just shows you the intensity of these joint practices.
I had a hunch you'd like that one. Here we got Dak Prescott is going to throw it to C.D. Lamb. Hit him in stride for the touchdown. Tim, what do you think of C.D. Lamb this year?
I like him a lot. I think he's a true number one. That's a pretty sweet route. That's excellent timing by Dak. He's a really good player. A lot of good ones have worn 88, and I think he's the next one in line for it.
That is a lot of pressure in Dallas, that number 88. A lot of history there. Mike T, check out this one-handed catch by Broncos tight end Albert Okwuegbunam. Thoughts?
That's how you catch the ball.
We know that. We know that Mike can't do this.
Yeah, that's for sure. This is going to be a pretty good offense if they get production out of him. They lost Tim Patrick, but Jerry Jeudy's still there, Hamler. So this is an offense that if Albert O can catch like this, they will be hard to stop.
Yeah, and look, they also upgraded a little bit at quarterback this offseason. If you remember back to March, they made a trade with the Seattle Seahawks for a player named Russell Wilson, who's accomplished some things in his career as an NFL quarterback. Yesterday, he talked about how he's feeling heading into the season and his future that lies ahead. Spoiler alert, Russell's optimistic.
Now I've played 10 years, going on my 11th year. You know, I got another whole 10 to 12 more years hopefully left to play. I feel amazing. I feel the best I've ever felt. I feel strong. I feel fast. I feel confident. No fear, you know. I feel like a winner.
You know, it sounds nuts, right? 10 to 12 years. But if he played 12 more years, he'd be the age Tom Brady is now. So think about that. Anyway, Canty, he says he feels like a winner. Can he and the Broncos be a winner this year?
Absolutely. And Graz, the best indicator for future performance is past performance. And since Russell Wilson has been in the NFL, you're talking about 8 of those 10 years being double-digit win seasons. And last year, the guy missed 3 games. But still, when you look at his body of work over the last 3 years, Russell Wilson has been top 5 in QBR. He's been top 5 in passing touchdowns and top 5 in touchdown to interception ratio. He's going to an organization that'll have a better offensive line, a better skill position core, and a better defense supporting him. There's no reason to think that Russell Wilson won't be able to do high-level winning, and that starts in 2022.
Tim, it all sounds great. Do you agree that Russell Wilson's best days could be ahead of him?
I don't know that his best days are ahead of him. I mean, listen, his first decade in the NFL has been outstanding. Mm-hmm. I think at times there, you know, you could make the argument that he was playing better than any other quarterback in the league at the time. I don't think that we are going to see that over the next decade. I'm not envisioning a scenario over the next 10 years where I'm saying, look, Russell Wilson's playing better than Patrick Mahomes, or Russell Wilson's playing better than Josh Allen. I don't think we'll see that. Now, that doesn't mean he's done or he's not going to be a good player, because that's not what I believe either. So I think he's still a really good quarterback, and I agree with everything Chris just said, but I also don't think that we're going to see a better version of Russell. And as he gets older, some of the things that he's been great at doing, escaping and creating, that won't be the same as it was earlier in his career.
I think coaching matters. Nathaniel Hackett's never called a play in the NFL. He may turn out to be a great head coach, but 20% of the time, a new head coach leads a team to the playoffs. So while Russell Wilson may play well, and they certainly look good on paper, when we talk about Andy Reid and some of those other coaches, Bill Belichick, Sean McDermott, on and on and on in the AFC, I think we're underrating the impact of having a rookie head coach who's never called a play before this season in Denver. Not saying that Russell Wilson won't work out. I believe he will, but I think there will be some growing pains.
Yeah, and that's a fascinating offensive experiment that people around the league are following closely, because Russell Wilson wanted more ownership of an offense, wanted to be more aggressive downfield. So the Broncos are trying to give him that and tailor things around him, but yet Russell Wilson, the biggest complaint with him in Seattle is he didn't get rid of the ball, took a ton of sacks. So they're trying to get him to throw with rhythm and timing, kind of like Aaron Rodgers did with Hackett in Green Bay. It could be a process. So, you know, it's not going to always go so smoothly. We'll see how quickly they can expedite that learning curve.
Tim, how good do you think this year's Broncos can be with Russell Wilson?
Listen, I think I'm not picking them to win their division. I think they can be good enough to win their division. The problem is that division is so hard, and I think that a lot of what the division is going to come down to is things other than the quarterback, to be just, you know, candid about it. And so, look, I think they can be really good. They're good on both sides of the ball. They're really talented. But I think if you start to favor things, you know, Mike T's talking about, you know, first-year head coach, I think that matters. And so, you know, we talked earlier about Andy Reid and that impact. Look, I think having a coach that knows how to win games in the National Football League is a big deal, especially in a very competitive division.
Canty, put a final word on this for us.
Yeah, I think the Denver Broncos are a wild card team. They're the second best team in the AFC West, and a big reason why is not only Russell Wilson, but they have the best defense in the division. So I think that defense will give the new head coach, Nathaniel Hackett, a little bit of margin for error in terms of being able to figure out how to be a head coach and also wearing the hat of being the offensive play caller.
All right, Chris Canty, we're going to say goodbye to you. You're heading over to First Take for the top of the hour. We're going to stay here, though, because we had a controversial situation develop in the Little League Little League Baseball. This is a regional game, Oregon versus Washington for a spot in Williamsport. Bottom of the seventh, tie game at 2. Washington has a runner on first. Braden Rudolph hits the ball down the third baseline. The umpire called it foul, but the runner from first comes around to score. What happened? Right? We're going to look at this again. You see the ball go down the third baseline, and the third base umpire throws up his hands. That means foul ball. But at the same time, the home plate umpire is calling the ball fair, and the third base coach sees this. He waves the runner home. The runner comes in to score. So we got to sort this all out, right? This is for a trip to Williamsport in the Little League World Series. This is big stuff. We got to figure out whether this ball was fair or foul. Fortunately, in Little League, they have replay review now, like they do everywhere else. And the call is upheld, and Washington wins the game. Oregon's players, you see here, devastated. Washington advances to the Little League World Series on a replay review call. pretty weird and controversial ending there in the Little League Baseball. So I guess good luck to Washington and condolences to Oregon. We have 5 Little League Regional Championship games today with a trip to the World Series in Williamsport on the line. We start with these 3. Missouri takes on Iowa in the Midwest at 1 Eastern. Then it's Pennsylvania and Delaware in the Mid-Atlantic Regional. And Utah and Nevada square off in the Mountain. All 3 games are on ESPN and the app. First Take is going to come up next when we're done here. They'll discuss whether the Saints are a legitimate threat to the Buccaneers. Plus, should Lamar Jackson play if he doesn't get that new contract? First Take when we're done here at the top of the hour. We're not done yet, so come back. We got top-ranked boxing Saturday night, highlighted by former unified lightweight champ Teofimo Lopez taking on Pedro Campa in the junior lightweight main event. Coverage begins at 10 Eastern on ESPN and ESPN Deportes, with ESPN Plus coverage of the prelims beginning at 6:30 Eastern. It is a football Friday, so before we wrap up the show for today and the week, we want to talk about what we have our eye on tonight. I will start. I'm going to go with Trevor Lawrence. I think this is going to be a really big year for Trevor Lawrence. People forget how well regarded he was as a prospect, what a complete fiasco last year was under Urban Meyer, and how good a coach Doug Peterson is. I think this is a situation that has a chance to improve dramatically this year. Eager to see how Trevor Lawrence fares. Jeremy, what are you looking forward to?
I'm going Trey Lance. I'm staying in that 2021 draft class. Trey Lance has started 3 games the last 2 years, from his days in college to last year with San Fran. He just needs experience, and everybody's eager to see what he can do. But he might be in the best situation because he's got the mastermind, Kyle Shanahan. He's got the weapons of George Kittle and Debo Samuel, good offensive line. So he should fit naturally, just like Mike T catching a punt. Very easily to him in the offense.
Mike T, what are you looking forward to other than us not talking about that anymore?
I got broad shoulders. Jordan Love, the quarterback is a developmental position. Jordan Love has not worked out yet. However, these are hugely consequential games in the development of Jordan Love's career. If he shows progress, it will give Green Bay a much bigger chance of having flexibility, knowing that Aaron Rodgers' situation is year to year.
All right, how about you, Hasselbeck? What are you looking forward to?
Yeah, listen, I know we're excited and football's back, but like, I can't even think about watching anything other than this. This like the display of unathleticism by Mike Tannenbaum. And I thought, well, listen, with catching punts, maybe it's not that easy. The amazing thing is, I'm not sure he ever played sports as a kid, because it goes beyond. Beyond football. In fact, it goes into baseball as well. Look at Rex painting
that's
the corner.
That's a wild pitch.
Like he's focused on broad shoulders. Hey, how about a little bit of agility or quickness? Like, way to knock it down.
So, 2 points of clarification.
You got 40 seconds.
Okay. I beat Rex Ryan in punt catching. That is well documented, not just video, however. And this is a wild pitch. And like many things running the Jets with Rex, I had to cover up for his mistakes, and things wound up working out. So.
Wow. Hey. Rex, wild
not
on today's pitch. Show to defend himself.
I mean, that's a strike. Video.
This is like our new version, this show's version of the Rick Roll. Like every time we're talking about something, we're going to throw the Tannenbaum punt return video on and take a look again. But why not? It's just that good. We've had a ton of fun here on Get Up today and all week. Thank you so much for joining us. First Take is next.